All right, welcome everybody to a special April in the D edition of Menace Podman, your NBA and fantasy basketball podcast. I'm Scott Keller along with Steve St. Pierre. Spring has sprung, and as you know, I've been taking a little hiatus away from the pod, but Steve's been keeping it going throughout the beginning of the summer and doing a great job over there, partner.
Missed you, buddy.
Missed you too. But the opportunity presented itself, and we could not pass it up. We honestly couldn't think of a better first guest for our pod. Really, no, you know, disrespect to the friends that we've had on, but this is kind of our real first guest here. If you're a Detroit sports fan, these guys are, you know, probably a nostalgic part of your sports fandom.
They better be.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the early 2000s there, but you may know these guys from winning the April and the FSD song competition in 2009, but they're much more than that, and we would like to, you know, welcome to the pod the Good Luck Joes. So thanks for joining us.
How you doing?
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, thank you.
Great to be here.
So, yeah, I mean, thanks for accepting our invitation. We sent you a little X invitation, and I was actually kind of surprised you responded, because we don't get much response from anybody else. But yeah, I do appreciate it. But
Scott, also, it's a reflection of how in demand we are right now.
Exactly. No, it's a hot hot ticket to get here. But no, we definitely appreciate it.
You're going to get a response from us on Twitter. It's April. That's when we light up the Twitter machine and we just get going. We get after it.
No, I do like that you embrace it though. I definitely appreciate that. You see it on your, you know, on your Twitter profile, you know, it's your legacy there, and it's a good legacy though, I got to say. So
thank you.
Yeah, just to forewarn you, any information I have on here, I basically got from the internet, which I know is 100% true information. So just correct me if I'm wrong here on anything that I say. But yeah, basically, I just want to go back, you know, that had the. Oh, also, I should say we're missing one. Did you want to introduce yourselves? I guess I should say first, but we are missing one member today.
Sure. Yeah, I'll start. My name's Andrew Martin. I was a singer and rhythm guitar player for the Good Luck Joes. Joe?
Oh, I'm Joe, bass player, singer a little bit, whistler, you know, things like that.
Andrew Cry, I was the lead guitar and did a few backup vocals here and there, wearing the Red Wings jersey in the video.
Oh, yeah. The Probert jersey then, right? Didn't you? Or the McCarty, sorry. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Yep, you had a theme.
A lot of X's in that jersey. That was a beautiful one. my name's Andrew Citron. I'm the third Andrew of this group. I played keys, a little backup vocals, but unlike these guys that have the voice of an angel, I have a much worse voice. So these guys handle the singing. And the fifth member that you alluded to that's not here, unfortunately, he has a very, very high-profile book club that we're told that he's hosting at his house. Peterson Goodwin, renowned drummer for the Good Luck Joes.
He was chasing the eclipse. I think he's just worn out from chasing the eclipse. That's what I heard.
He did go on an eclipse trip. And
a lot of steps.
One point of clarification, Peter in the video is wearing an Allen Iverson jersey, not a Chauncey Billups jersey.
That is good. That is good information to know.
Yeah,
I definitely thought it was
critical.
That makes
he refined his drumming style actually after Allen Iverson. Yeah. But he'll have to tell you that another time.
Yes, he will, for sure, especially on this podcast.
Yeah, we'll have to have another reunion here. But I guess, how did you guys start? Did you guys all go to school together? You guys just live in the same area? Are you all still in the same area now, in Grand Rapids still area?
No, not anymore, but we all grew up kind of within, I don't know, 2 miles of each other in Grand Rapids, went to high school together and started playing. Joe and Andy and I started playing when we were in eighth grade. Cry, you joined the band a couple years after that. Peter joined around the same time. And, you know, since then, of course, as we've matriculated into adulthood, we've kind of gone our separate ways, which is a shame because we just don't see each other as much as we'd like to. But spent a few years living in Milwaukee, where we did a lot of our heaviest lifting, right? So I would say, I don't know, you guys, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we enjoyed above average levels of success for your run-of-the-mill band that started out of somebody's basement and then recorded a few albums, traveled, we toured, played with some actual real acts that had real success in the music biz over time. And, we're fortunate enough to get some songs on TV and get a little bit of exposure that way. And April and the D was kind of
icing,
the cherry on top.
I live
in Michigan still. I'm the only member of the group that still lives in Michigan.
Gotcha. Was there one specific person that kind of got the band together, was playing, or was it kind of just a group thing where everybody kind of just realized, hey, everybody else is interested type thing?
Joe, you start.
I mean, yeah, I guess kind of, because we were all just kind of meeting in my basement and with the drum kit and then bringing more things over. And it went from there.
This is a tip for parents. Never buy a drum kit, because if you have a drum kit, the band will practice at your house.
Yeah.
Most great things in life, right? We had no aspirations of April and the D or really anything. We just all got together, started playing in Joe's basement, and pretty soon it evolved just naturally into us writing our own music and, things taking off, recording, and it took on a life of its own, to Andrew's point of had a lot of success where things went, of licensing music, touring around the world. Let's actually say like the Midwest, maybe a little bit around the country. We're still waiting on that tour cry in Europe and Asia.
There is a story about our international leg of the tour that was cut short when we couldn't get into Canada, but that's another, that's for the podcast with Peter.
Fair enough.
I'm still barred from Canada to this day.
That's actually a true story.
That is a true story, as am I. Or it's a real pain to get in and out, put it that way.
Yep, I can't wait for part two now.
Yeah, that's all right. A great tease right there.
All right, let's see. So you were talking about, touring and the success you had. Was there ever any, certain inspirations? Or I know it looks like you played with a bunch of people. We've got one of our best friends, a good friend, listens to the show all the time, Tim Smith. Shout out to you. He's a big Colin Hay fan. It says you guys played with him. What was experiences with that? Or with him, I should say.
So I'll speak to this one, because we played two gigs with Colin. We played with them in Milwaukee and also in San Diego. And when we were on a trip to LA to play a couple of gigs, the producer on our record at the time had actually produced Colin's album as well. Chad Fisher is the guy's name. Just great, great talent. Chad. Fun aside, Chad's band, Laszlo Bain, did the theme song for the show Scrubs. So you're probably familiar with his work, right?
Yep.
But, great guy. And it just so happened while we were out there, Peter and I had the opportunity to go with Chad to visit Colin Hay's house in the Topanga Canyons. And I mean, it was like completely something out of a movie. This guy, his songs, they're huge hits. He's an incredible talent. And you're like, pinching yourself, like, what am I doing? He was making his coffee in his kitchen. Like, what, and I remember, so the thing about Colin is he wrote down under, of course, he's not Australian, right? Which most people don't, they think Men at Work is an Australian band, not Australian. But he had this like honorary citizen of Australia plaque in the recording studio in his house. So an international man of mystery was Colin.
That's awesome.
But what I really loved about him, at that time, the Garden State soundtrack was big. If you remember that movie, right?
Yeah.
That song. Mm-hmm. I Just Don't Think I'll Ever Get Over You on that soundtrack. It's just amazing song. If you don't know it, go take a listen to it. But I remember one of the nights before our show, we were talking with his wife, who performed in the band as well. And she was like, is there anything you want to hear him play? And that was the first thing that came to mind for me. And then he played it in the gig that night. And it felt like a really cool, maybe he was planning on doing it anyway, but it felt really cool to me.
No, he just did
a great guy. Awesome experience for us.
No, it's very cool. Any other people that you performed with that you have any memorable stories about, or that you really, just kind of blew your mind? Or is he the number one?
I got some ideas, but
no.
So, I mean, I got to go with ABC. So there's, I don't know if you ever would have heard of this band. You would know their music from frankly, no offense to these guys, but like grocery stores and hotel, elevators and that sort of thing now. Mm. But awesome Brit new wave kind of 80s pop band. And we got booked alongside them for several shows, kind of all up and down the East Coast and a few shows in the Midwest, and just fell in love with their music. It was like this total nostalgia act, and people would show up, of a completely different era from the type of music that we were playing. And, at that point in time, early 20s, these guys are probably whatever in their 50s, something like that. But it was an unbelievable experience. They were great to us, just kind of taking us under their wing at times, hanging out backstage, that sort of thing. And it's not like a glamorous lifestyle when you're kind of bouncing around from gig to gig and you're playing these kind of smaller venues, but it's just sort of this like sense of fellowship that you have with these people that you're hanging out with. And you're just trying to have a good time. And we were just trying to figure it all out at that point too. We were so young and so inexperienced in life, let alone in the music industry. So, I mean, shout out to those guys, because that was awesome. Martin Fry, the lead singer, legend.
Great guy.
So, one we have to note, though, Thomas Dolby, She Blinded Me with Science.
Yeah.
We opened for him at a small club in Milwaukee once, and he came out in the full, like, mad scientist gear. It was amazing. Amazing.
That would be incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. Sounds like some good stuff. As far as venues wise, did you have any specific venues that were memorable you played at? I know it looks like you played at in Baltimore at Rams Head Live and in different places like that. Was there any specific venue that was just like, this is awesome?
Joe,
Whiskey A Go-Go, I guess.
No.
I thought it was pretty spectacular. I thought that was a lot of fun because it's got a rich history of those guys, everybody that's played there. I thought that was pretty spectacular.
I want to jump in real quick and just ask you guys, what venues did you like locally, and what were some of the ones that you kind of started at, and are there any that you have any like cool stories about or anything?
Well, I think if you're talking about Detroit area venues, we did the Royal Oak Music Theater a couple of times, which, is a great
spot.
That
was wonderful.
Incredible acts there. Yeah. It was one of the bigger venues that we got to play. And it was just a really, really cool experience. Very pro over there. Of course, for April and the D, we played at the Fillmore, which was a treat. That was a really cool thing. We did a lot of festival gigs over the years. In Ann Arbor, the Blind Pig was a really fun, cool venue. And we were really in peak college age at the time when we were rocking it. And so we had some really good shows there, but, if you've ever been to Summerfest in Milwaukee, right, we played that for, gosh, how many years in a row?
Six or seven.
Seven maybe.
And as we played more and more, we got bigger and bigger stages and better time slots, right? So by the end of it, we're like in the 7 o'clock time slot opening for the headliner, and that was a pretty cool experience. I think for me, my favorite venue we ever played was probably the House of Blues in Chicago. That was pretty cool. It felt like that was one of those where you're like, okay, yeah, I could get used to this. Yeah, but then, the next day you play a venue in St. Paul, Minnesota, and there are two people there.
Good deal. All right. I guess as far as like, so what you guys have you had the three EPs out, and then was it just the two full length albums then, if this is correct? And then, like you said, you were, kind of featured on all different TV shows, and there was some movie it says about Jennifer Aniston movie or something. Was there any time that you actually heard your music on something and then you were like, oh crap, this is, this is real. This is us playing somewhere, or kind of surreal moment, if you will.
Well, this one, I don't know if they got. Cry, you go first.
I was just going to say that a handful of times, I guess, that were sort of surreal. And granted, it was more local radio, but just when you get in the car, you turn on the car and, listening to radio back in the day, not podcasts or something like that, but turn on the car and like your song's on the radio in the car as soon as you turn it on. And that was just sort of a strange, surreal thing. It only happened a handful of times, but that was probably one of the cooler moments. Again, even though it's local radio, it's like, hey, it's, we got something going here. People like us. How about that?
Yeah.
That definitely, that definitely felt bizarre. What I was going to say, these guys might not be thrilled that I'm sharing this, but it might have been 2008 or 2009. Guilty pleasure when I was an undergrad was Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Okay, still on. I'm watching it, you know, late, like it's like a Friday, Saturday night, you know, you're back with buddies, you're having a drink, and we're watching the show and our song comes on. Yeah. And I'm immediately texting these guys going, did we have a licensing deal with the Kardashians? come to find out, we didn't. And so our producer goes back, or Ken actually, our manager goes back and says, you know, what happened? And they ended up kind of paying us basically like a penalty because we were supposed to have an agreement locked down for that, but we didn't yet. So
way to be on top
that,
of it.
That yeah. was a funny. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I was on. I was on top Sam immediately.
That's amazing.
It's incredible.
Calling Sam, man. I was actually just thinking. I assume you guys have seen the Detroiters episode with the April and the D thing, and I'm sure that comes up a lot.
No,
I was gonna say I actually hadn't seen it until just, you know, recently. I can't believe I hadn't seen it, but I was just curious your guys' take on that because I think
it's hilarious. Yeah, so like you're asking about moments where something happens and you're like, you know, oh my god, for me that's like. And it was so far after the fact, too, that it was just like, this is insane. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the show. Love, you know, Robinson and Richardson. And we grew up watching Tim Meadows on SNL. So it's like, Leon Phelps has definitely seen my video.
Yeah.
He's definitely heard this song. Like, I mean, when you watch the episode, it's unmistakable that they've filtered through every different kind, right? Because they do all the different cliches and the tropes. And to this day, it's like, I was at Tigers opening day last week, which was awesome. I don't know if you guys got a chance to go, but they were there to sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game. And I was waiting for them to say something about April and the D. I was hoping, I was just hoping so bad, like, let them say something, and they didn't do it. But yeah, I mean, to see Tim Meadows doing a spoof April and the D was like the peak.
Yeah,
we've reached the mountaintop.
No, they did a great job with that. That was hilarious. But, you know, I guess now I'll just turn it over to the actual April and the D part. So I guess, I don't know. My big question was, whose idea, did you guys see this? Like a commercial? I don't even remember if there was commercials. Was there a commercial saying, hey, do people want to, you know, get in the contest? This is the second year, right? Because they wanted to make it local.
Yeah. So in 2008, I was in Ann Arbor with my buddies at our house, and, you know, we're watching every Tigers game, every Red Wings game, every Pistons game. And I forget the name of the band from the first year. Do you guys remember?
Blacklist Union.
I was going to say, I knew they were from California.
Yeah. And I just remember we sat there and, you know, they of course knew I had this band and they were really supportive of it. And it was just like this, like what a bunch of people in LA thought Detroit was. Right. And it was very clear that this was kind of a caricature, but it was, you know, it accomplished its goal, I guess, right? Because it was a little earworm that stuck in everybody's head. And I remember a bunch of the guys in the house at the time were like, Andrew, Good Luck Joe should do this. You guys should do this. Like, you can do an April and D song. At the time, it was like, okay, whatever. Like, that's never going to happen. Then fast forward 6 months later, I think it was November or Christmas time, they started advertising, like, we're going to do a contest for 2009. I was home in Grand Rapids for the holidays, and I think the deadline for submission was coming up, and I was like, I don't know, like I was in the shower, and I was thinking about this tune and like silly turns of phrase that were all themed, and kind of wrote it down. And, you know, I mean, it was contrary to everything we had tried to do as, you know, quote unquote artists, right? Yeah. So it was just, this is a jingle. It's silly. I kind of put it in my back pocket. I was like, the guys will never go for this. Like, this, there's no way I will get these guys to do this. And I think, you know, it was like a matter of a week or two before the deadline for submission. And I just sent them an email, I think. And I was like, I don't know, guys, like, what do you think about doing this? And I mean, to everybody's credit, like, all on board. No, I mean, at least no outward hesitation toward me. So I'll let the rest of you tell the band what you thought about it, but
you couldn't keep us away.
point.
Yeah. I mean, what I remember was we had no in for the contest, right? So many of these things, you hear about it through a channel that someone's plugged in. You kind of have the inside scoop of what they're looking for. I mean, we were completely coming at it blind, right? We were just fans. We were from Michigan, and we had a band. So, I mean, to Andrew's point, there was no hesitation. We thought it would be really cool. We also had absolutely no thought that we would win. I mean, right. I remember, you know, we put the song together, and I remember we were all sitting around, you know, fucking around saying, we want to make the most annoying song possible that people can't stop listening to. And we're like, can we do it? And so, you know, we're playing it up and we want to make it good, but we want to make it just extra kind of like annoying to check that box.
Sure.
And then I just remember being absolutely shocked. Do you guys remember how we figured out we won? Was it just an email?
I don't remember.
I think they had like a selection show, you know, they boiled it down to the top three. We made it into the top three. And then I think there was like some serious ballot stuffing going on. I don't know that. I don't know that they were that vigilant about one man, one vote.
Less than democratic. I just remember as soon as I heard it, it was stuck in my head. And I was like, you know, whether or not we end up doing this thing and recording it, and if anything happens with it, it's like, this is just a super catchy little anthem that Andrew just wrote.
It was, and it is. I mean, even to this day, you know, and it's not even Fox Sports anymore. But, you know, as soon as April comes, it's the first thing that any of us ever think of. And you guys don't understand. Like, we've got our whole group of friends, and we were singing it to each other. And it just brings back so many awesome memories. And, yeah, can't thank you guys enough for that.
And like we said, there's also multiple years they did it, but your guys' song is the one that we always reference and we always
absolutely
are
it's
singing.
The first
like,
one.
Yeah,
so
it's
iconic.
You guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I mean, it's true. I mean, like we said, the year after it was Victoria's Secrets, and then the year after that, there was some, I think, another ballot stuffing controversy the year after that. And then after that, they scrapped it, and they went into like the Fox Sports Girls and stuff like that and started doing competitions for those. So yeah, no, I mean, yeah, your guys' tune is the one every year we're singing in April. So
well,
it's kind of cool.
You know, and it's funny because I think they were just, Fox Sports Detroit was just so much more aggressive with it in 2009 at the beginning of the month. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, it was, you guys remember this, but it was every pitching change, every timeout, every opportunity. It was the full length version, the 30-second version, the 15-second version, and you just couldn't escape it. So, you know, there was certainly some overexposure, maybe.
But I'll say,
talk about the death threats that we received as a result.
Oh, God. Yeah. I remember reading and hearing some of that crap, and that was bullshit. But I got to say, it was perfect timing, too, because at that time, all of our teams were really good, really competitive, and it was a lot of fun to watch. Way different atmosphere now. And so the timing, in my opinion, couldn't have been any better. So.
So you're so saying funny. If we come back, all the Detroit teams will get good again if we do this again?
If that, listen, if that's what – if we can make that happen, let's make that happen right now.
Yeah, now you got to do like January or February in the D for the Lions, and I think that's about all we got right now. So
maybe some college stuff. But
we're open to suggestions. Yeah.
But it was so funny. I mean, we don't take ourselves too seriously, and we'd never gotten – hate mail or anything like that in the past, really. I mean, we had the handful of people that didn't like our music, but it was whatever, you know, just shrug it off. But this was legitimately very polarizing, obviously, in Detroit, and they're playing it nonstop. So even if you liked it, you would end up hating it just because of the frequency you're hearing it. But I think the best one, the story that I remember, was the guy sent us a Wikipedia entry for bridges in Michigan and said, why don't you guys pick one of these and jump off? It was like that. Was
people
creative,
are fucked
actually.
Up, man.
Really creative.
But it was a long email. He detailed the bridges and what about the bridges appealed to him as a fit for us.
Right, like right. The heights of each bridge and right. All that stuff.
I think so, should I tell them that Kathy designs me, bridges?
Like, would we die on impact or would we be out for a while? You know, all that.
My stuff. Wife's a transportation engineer, so funny but not funny.
And yeah, I guess you guys seem like you all, you know, good spirits and can talk about it now, but at the time, was that hard to deal with some of that stuff at that time, or were you guys able to kind of get past it and just be like, these people are idiots. It was
a highlight for us, actually. Yeah. Okay. We felt like we had really made it now that people didn't really like us.
Nice.
Because one of our downfalls, I think, was we were too nice. We were too on time, too professional.
Too punctual.
Way too punctual. My God, we were early for things. We're supposed to be way late. So instead, suddenly people are saying, you guys should go kill yourselves. We're like, wow, this is fantastic. We need more of this.
Very edgy. Yeah. Very edgy. But it was, you know, it was beautiful because what we did was a complete 180 from what the previous year's version of April and the D was. And Fox Sports Detroit, I think they wanted the bubblegum jingle, you know, and I think it was a perfect fit for what they were trying to do, how they were trying to make it kind of like more, I don't know, family friendly even. Obviously it was corny. Like we went in, we recorded the song and filmed the video in the same day at the studio in Royal Oak. I forget the name of it, but great studio. It was a really awesome opportunity to go there. And, you know, the producer, I forget his name. I don't know if any of you guys remember the guy's name, but he had us trying a whole bunch of different funny things where we'd like yell, "Tigers!" You know, it's like, you know, so over the top corny, right? Like, and, you know, if you don't watch the video, because the video is talking about over the top corny, like that's next level over the top. But, you know, the production value on the song is actually really good. Mm-hmm. and it sounded great. And the feel for it and the style, if you go and listen to any of our songs on Spotify or anything like that, I mean, you'll hear it. You know, that was uniquely kind of our style and a lot of our more upbeat, you know, poppier rock songs that we did.
Mm-hmm. Good deal. Yeah, all right. Well, awesome. I think we've taken a lot of your time. I think We appreciate it again, but I'm just going to go at it again. I don't know if you guys have anything you're working on now or anything that you're still doing or what you guys are up to now. Just curious if you don't have to share if you don't want to. I mean, I'm a sales analyst somewhere, so for an automotive company. So that's what I do, but I don't know if you guys want to share anything.
I just started playing again for the most part. Yeah. I mean, I'm back at it. Just got it back from the shop, the old Roscoe. It's purring. I mean, tickling it, you know, it's sounding good.
I got to come visit you at that new house, Joe. We got to break in that Roscoe.
Oh, yeah, break it in. I'm just rattling it out over here. This old house is falling apart already.
No way. Like you built that thing with your bare hands, Joe. I did. There's no way it's falling apart.
These things.
I mean, I don't know about, you know, Andrew Cry, but I'm also starting to play again. You know, we love music and we remain close friends, but as it happens in life, you know, you get real jobs and things move forward. And so we love those days and we reminisce, but, you know, my piano's sitting here in the background by my desk. So I'm starting to play again and I love it. So, you know, you never know when we'll be back together, at least playing for fun. Maybe April and D, you never know.
If you don't mind me asking, do any of you guys have kids? Are any of them getting into music? Anything like that?
I've got two kids. They're 4.5 and 2.5, right? So we're in it right now in our world. But, I mean, you can tell our house, as you can imagine, it's always filled with music. We always have music on. I don't play as much as I wish I could, you know, just you only have so many hours in the day and you have so many stresses and demands on your time. Yeah. But, you know, the dancing, the singing, it's all happening with the little ones. And I think there's an inevitability to it. At some point, somebody's going to want to do something. We got the little mini guitars, we got the microphones, all those sorts of things. They're not really impressed by me, of course, right? And they probably never will be. But, but we like to show him every once in a while, hey, this was that thing that he did that one time.
You say you're rocking music. You got anything on the top of your playlist right now, or is it very kind of eclectic and all over the place?
Oh, man.
I guess it could be for everybody. If,
yeah. Anything. I'll let someone else take it because it's going to be way better than what I have.
Asia right now. Yep. Steely Dan. Can't get enough of it.
Nice.
Obsessed.
Timeless. I just got into a fight with my wife about how I prefer Dua Lipa to Taylor Swift. Probably going to get a lot of hate for that, but I like pop bangers. That's my thing.
Are you saying that Taylor Swift is more like a Chauncey Billups? Would you say that who's Dua Lipa for the little Pistons team? I mean,
she's like Sheed, you know? She just brings the heat.
She does. Gotcha. Tremendous range.
Well said.
A lot of passion.
We got a lot of rotation in the new Beyonce country stuff at our house right now. that and the Encanto soundtrack.
Oh, Encanto's big over here too. Yep. Mm-hmm. I have a 4 and a 1-year-old, by the way. That's what
there
I'm
you go.
To, not yep. just I don't just listen to Encanto myself.
We were in a Frozen phase last year, so our Spotify top artist of the year was Kristen Bell.
There you go.
Which I can't imagine, you know, there are too many people that had her as their number one artist, but
still big into the Moana soundtrack as well. It's a good one.
Oh, very good.
So Scott and Steve, are you guys usually just, you know, BSing about the Detroit Pistons, or what are you guys talking about this time of year?
No, so we cover all of the NBA. We cover all of basketball, really, but we primarily focus on NBA and we primarily focus on fantasy basketball. And so we spend most of our time talking about that, but we do mix a lot of different stuff, and especially really like anything pertaining to basketball. We usually bring it up in some form or fashion. And
we have a longtime season ticket holder on the line here for the Bucks, so he may or may not have some inside knowledge. But we're all hoops fans, and we're apologetic for, you know, one of these days. Hopefully, the Pistons will be aspiring to more than the number one pick. We're all pulling for that.
Yeah, no, it's going to take a lot of time and a lot of effort, and we got another episode that we're going to be publishing here momentarily when we're done here. And we got into it. My buddy and I were on and we got into it, long discussion, and it's going to be a long off season. We'll see what they can do. And really, you know, like we said before, all of our teams right now kind of struggling a little bit. Obviously the Lions had a really good year and hopefully they can build on it, but it's a tough time right now in Detroit sports. So anything we can do to shine some light on it, and you know, you guys definitely did that. And again, you know, we really appreciate it. And it's a classic. I mean, it's just an absolute iconic. Like we said, anytime the calendar turns to April, it's the first thing that us and really like any Detroit sports fan should think of immediately.
I'm going to go listen to it when we get off this call.
You should.
As you should. I mean.
But yeah. No, I'll just wrap it up here, but we totally appreciate it. Like I said, I was telling
thank you so much.
One of the Andrews, they're the first Andrew on here, I didn't think you guys would even respond. We never had anybody really respond to us on a lot of the stuff. We reached out to some of the other bands too, and they just kind of, you know, shot us down. So, we completely appreciate it. You guys are awesome. Sorry, I cut you off there, Joe.
Oh, no, thanks.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, if anybody else wants to find some other stuff they do, check out, you know, you guys are on Spotify. You got music all over YouTube and stuff like that. So you can find some more stuff that Good Luck Joe has put out. If you do, it sounds like maybe you guys are all picking up the instruments, you get a little reunion together. Probably should have one local reunion show somewhere. We'd love an invite if you're up for it. But, and also,
you guys be the first call if that comes together.
We appreciate it. And if you guys want to do this again sometime, you know, later, obviously we don't have to do it next week, but when Peter's available, you know, we can maybe get into, you know, some more fun stuff too. But
a long month, Scott. It's a long month.
It is.
A lot of April left.
I mean, this one went, I'm not to say I expected this to go awful, but I mean, like I said, this was one of our first interviews, so I'm glad it went very well. And I do appreciate it.
Better than awful. Yeah.
But, you know, we all have gorgeous faces for radio, so I never had a doubt that this would go well.
Same here.
But yeah, so yeah, we appreciate everybody for listening to this special April and the D edition of Menace Podman. You can find new episodes every week wherever you find audio podcasts. And yeah, that's it. So yeah, thank you to the Good Luck Joes for joining us, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks,
appreciate
guys.
It, guys.
Thanks,
gentlemen.
Hey, it's Scott from Menace Podman, and if you love sports and you're a somewhat low-key gambling degenerate like I am, you should definitely check out Outlier.bet. They have a super easy-to-use platform supported on both mobile and desktop sites, and it really allows you to crunch the numbers and make you get some confidence in the bets that you're making. You can do multiple things on Outlier. You can explore across multiple markets. You can get suggestions on and curated picks. You can analyze trends, matchup data, line movement. And my favorite feature, Outlier is integrated with multiple betting sites. So you can seamlessly transfer your picks to automatically fill out your bet slips with just as easy as two clicks. So there's a link directly in the show notes to Outlier. You should check them out. Click on the link, go to the site, sign up, get a free 7-day trial of Outlier, and go win some money.
And Miss Parman.